This podcast contains material that some listeners may find distressing. Content includes explicit language and themes related to workplace bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, intimidation, stalking, physical and sexual violence, discussions relating to self-harm and suicidality, disordered eating, other mental health issues, sexism, racism, and homophobia. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Behind Blue Doors podcast, where the women of law enforcement waive their right to remain silent and speak their truth. So welcome to a special episode of Behind Blue Doors. Today we have four fantastic women with us. We have, first off, Sergeant Lee, who was on our first episode with us. She has graciously agreed to come back and chat about a different topic. We have Karen, who was an ex-police officer from Scotland with 20 years service. We have Maureen, who is 24 years on with her police service. She's a mom of two, and she's been married 17 years to a police officer. She's also a victim of harassment and has an ongoing human rights complaint against her employer. So now I'm going to turn it over to Lee, and she's going to introduce you to our topic today.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm so happy that we could make this time frame work for everybody as we've got Karen from Scotland. All right, so what we wanted to talk about, what's just hit the news, is the Sarah Everard murder. Okay, so I'm just going to give some details about that. Sarah's 33 years old, disappeared March 3rd, 2021, after leaving a friend's house in South London. She had called her boyfriend and was on her way, we believe, to see him. When she doesn't show up, he calls and reports her missing the next day. And she's found 80 miles from that location where she was abducted, raped, and strangled by Wayne Cousins. Wayne Cousins, the police officer who's now been found guilty of kidnapping and being responsible for Sarah Everett's death. He's a UK police officer, and 3 days ago he was sentenced to life in prison. And I know laws are different at different places around the world. From looking it up, it looks like the life sentence is until death in the UK. So he will be serving that. And Philip Allott, North Yorkshire, England, police, fire, and crime commissioner, who made comments the other day that have set an uproar for women around the world. The quote of what he says is, "So women, first of all, need to be streetwise about when they can be arrested and when they can't be arrested. She should never have been arrested and submitted to that. Perhaps women need to consider in terms of the legal process to just learn a bit about the legal process." Obviously, I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on this. Two things that I'd like to achieve in the podcast, or where I'd like the discussion to go and delve into, is one, the failure by the police services that Wayne Cousins worked for and the previous offenses that he had already been investigated for, and then how this continues. And then the second point, obviously, we want to talk about is Philip Allott, this narrative that continues with no...
Well, the victim blaming, right? So placing the onus squarely on the shoulders of the victim to prevent their own death, their own rape, their own assault.
It's on us women to fix it, not the behavior of the men that you need to address.
Yeah. So rather than, let's say, instituting a curfew for men so women can be safe... We tell women to be inside before dark.
Exactly. So I'd love to open up the round table. First, I just wanted to say, just to give the audience a background, Wayne Cousins worked for, was investigated by Kent Police. They didn't look into reports of an indecent exposure by him in 2015. And then the second one was an investigation into whether there's a current investigation happening into whether London police failed to investigate and address reports of indecent exposure incidents that are linked to Cousins. I mean, this is just, we know most of these offenders have been reported before, and the system that we work in holds no accountability to these officers. And it's open to the table. Let's discuss. Mo?
You know, this case for me, when I read about all the previous incidents of exposures and that their own police service, Kuzin's own police service, wherever he was working, they investigated these incidents. And it goes back to when we listened to Michelle Bastarache, the Supreme Court Justice, who said when he looks in his report, he talks about the biggest problem is the discipline process and the lack of police services to take these things seriously. And in my case, the individual who I was harassed by had previously exposed himself inappropriately using his cell phone and sending pics to women. Now, this was previous to mine, and then he harassed me. But, you know, we all know that past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. I mean, how much have we heard that?
I just want to jump in and say, for those who don't know, Michelle Bastarache, he was the Supreme Court judge who was responsible for implementing the Merlo-Davidson settlement. And his final report was called Broken Lives, Broken Dreams. And he was looking into sexual harassment and discrimination within the RCMP. And over 3,000 women came forward to tell their stories of what they'd experienced. And compensation was provided at 6 different levels to over 2,000 women. I think it was 2,406 women were compensated, and family members as well. So for the women who experienced the greatest and most detrimental experiences, it had a great impact on their families. And he determined that their families were eligible for compensation as well.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, that's what struck me the most is I find that discipline, it goes away after in Canada. And Karen, maybe you can speak to this. But we have informal process and we have a formal process. And in both cases, if they are disciplined, if an officer is disciplined, in 2 years, it goes away from their file and it's gone. It has no reflection on their future. It has no reflection on whether they get promoted. Same with 5 years. So then we have a whole system, which from my own personal experience, we have a whole system of management that in the private sector wouldn't even have a job, never mind be promoted. And it just sends a message to everyone. When you talk about culture, what's the problem? Why is this happening? Well, it's happening because everyone knows it's happening and they allow it to continue. So it's not surprising to me. So when they're all calling for, how did the Met miss this? How come when he was hired from these other services, because Kuzin's worked at several different places, why didn't anyone know about this? Well, it's because in the policing world, you get out of jail free card after 2 years after doing something. And it has absolutely no bearing on where you go and whether you're promoted or not. So,
well, and that's if you're even investigated truly at all, because these policies are in place.
Exactly.
It's almost like they're just there for show, right?
Yeah.
Unless somebody, they really want to get an individual out, it's becoming a problem and they know it's going to hit the media or whatever, then they'll actually move forward.
Like a victim like Lee, who they're trying to silence. And so she's getting in more trouble than a lot of these men get for horrendous things that they should be fired for.
Yeah.
So that's my, thank you for letting me go first.
I think another important piece to that is even when, like you said, there are punishments or discipline measures implemented, they don't match the crime, so to speak, if that makes sense.
No, and maybe someone can help me with this, but the discipline is supposed to be progressive. And, you know, we work in a policing world where we're all investigators. And when we look at a crime or a criminal, and we research them and we do our investigation, we look at all of the previous pattern of behavior. But it amazes me that within our own services, that pattern of behavior goes out the window. And it's not progressive. They take each and every single situation or entity onto itself and don't consider anything that happened before. So how are you protecting women? How are you protecting women that work for policing? How are you changing the culture? How are you fixing this? You're demonstrating to the masses that you can pretty much do whatever you want.
Right.
And in 2 years, you can start fresh.
Karen, what being in Scotland, so you're obviously geographically a little closer to the situation that's going on. What sort of perspective are you getting, or what are you hearing about what's happening?
What Mo said was really quite interesting, because I think the whole discipline system or process is just window dressing. I certainly experienced that myself. When any woman makes a complaint, I think there's a knee-jerk reaction to automatically challenge anything they say, whether it's sexual, victimisation, discrimination. So in my own case, when I reported a supervisor, every single senior manager told me I was lying. Casually, you know, you've made it up, you're lying. And then ultimately, my complaint against 9 senior officers, I asked oversight bodies to carry out an independent investigation of the entire saga, because so much information I couldn't get access to. And also I felt it was vital to know exactly what had been done, which was triggered purely by my complaint about someone, about a male officer. But the oversight bodies had no interest. So ultimately I had to ask the force to investigate themselves. So 2 years this went on, where I was in limbo waiting for them to do this investigation. And then I discovered that during that, 2 of the senior officers who were subject of that complaint were promoted. So I took that as a bit of a clue. And then when we finally got to court for the employment tribunal, so this really senior officer apparently carried out this thorough investigation, which discovered that every single one of my complaints had no merit at all. He admitted that there was no record of his investigation. So all there was available to a court of law was his conclusion that it was all nonsense. But there was no record of what he'd done over 2 years, who he'd interviewed, who he'd spoken to, what their statement was. Nothing. None of that was available. So I think it's just, I think we know it's nonsense now, those of us who have gone through it. And I think they know it's nonsense. But I feel after the Sarah Everard case, the public need to know that. I think that's absolutely vital, that the public realise that, as we have, there is no protection, there's no real protection, whether you're within policing or out with policing. That I think the point is that the public believe that our policing exists with a system of checks and balances on their power, when in reality there are no checks and balances, because police mark their own homework. And the people doing the investigation of the police have no interest in the truth. So they've no interest in personal responsibility for their shortcomings, and no interest in the public discovering exactly how the system operates and how they quash dissent or whistleblowers. And what's really bothering me about this huge clamour about Sarah Everard is these politicians and people that, you know, work in these think tanks, you know, people that work in policing, they know. They know exactly how the system works, because they couldn't have avoided.
Oh, they created it. They created it.
They created it. You know, I reached out. I mean, I've been trying to, you know, give my evidence to politicians in Scotland for 6 years now. But there's just no real appetite to address the police, because, you know, let's just keep pretending.
No, I agree. I agree, Karen. And I think it's what we've all experienced with our police services. This isn't, I think we've all, when I say all, the public is certainly not aware to the extent that we are as police officers, or having worked as a police officer or FBI agent. This is the playbook. There is a playbook, and it's built on some kind of, I don't know, colonialism, patriarchy, white cowboy, the biggest
gang in the world of unwritten rules,
organized crime.
Yes, yeah. It's the biggest organized crime group in the world. Exactly.
I just wanted to say one more point to Karen, what you were saying, the idea that it's police policing themselves and there is no outside oversight. And if there is, for example, like a police services board or something, the members that serve on it they're all in cahoots with each other, right? So it's previous police members, and there's always this political agenda, which is always to protect the status quo.
Yeah. And Susan, if I may, it's also if the community knew the amount of money spent to defend this type of behavior that's indefensible. We have rules, we have regulations, we have policies coming out the yin yang, but they're not worth the paper they're written on when no one actually is held accountable for their behavior. And I think that the public would be disgusted because they're always talking about, you know, how there's not enough money for this or for that. And if they knew how much money the police, and I don't know how they do it, I think it's because it's the Police Services Board in Ontario, at least, that looks over these expenses. But they should have to reveal that they're spending, for instance, $800 an hour on a Bay Street lawyer to defend indefensible behavior against a whistleblower who is probably telling the truth, and it's a problem. Like, and I'm sure the public,
or they'll spend $800
an hour
to get counsel against.
That's
me.
What I'm saying.
Like social media, it's not even criminal. Like it's Police Service Act stuff, and you're paying a lawyer $800 an hour to make sure that your narrative continues to be sold, and that I continue to know that each and like I am the target. How dare you have spoken up? Now you're going to pay.
Lee, you cannot tell your truth. You're not allowed because that exposes and it pokes holes.
We need to get over being a victim. Enough already. We've all had enough. I mean, that's essentially what it is. Like, okay, yeah, it happened. We're good. Let's move on. I'm sorry, but we all know it doesn't work like that. And if we treated victims of crime that way in the community, we wouldn't have jobs. So...
Here's part of the problem is, not part of the problem. It's one of the main issues is they bring in all these, you know, it's all lip service. Okay. Yes. We're going to bring this person in to investigate. And then the report comes out and yeah, you have a huge systemic culture issue. Here's what you need to do. And then nothing. And then nothing.
All this money spent on
all this money spent. And it's like all for lip service. And then they,
and
do
in the
nothing.
Case of the RCMP, they were able to get as far as they got because they were all under one umbrella across the country. And the problem is when you look at all these police services, and Karen, I'm assuming it's the same everywhere, is that we're all separate. And so who do you report to? Who do you as a group say, come on, this is a cultural issue? And again, the retired justice, Michelle Bazarad, said that. He said, these women have a strong case because half of them more than half haven't even met each other. They haven't even, and they have the same stories. Can you imagine if you took all the women across Canada and we all spoke and one person actually listened? Can you imagine the crossover and the patterns of behavior and the consistency? And that's the problem.
That's what we're doing here.
And I agree, but how do you bring it all together? What body do you go to report this?
Well, and that's the issue, because the federal government will say, well, this is a provincial. Right. And then the provincial say, well, it's municipal or whatever. So, but there has to be some sort of change to allow for all to come, because it is, it's across. I think it would be interesting. I don't think you'd find one police organization where there hasn't been one woman touched by sexual harassment or discrimination or intimidation or reprisal.
Right. And really, the public needs to complain. They do, because if they'll treat their police women and their own this way, then you got to believe they're going to treat the public and the community this way. Not all of them, but are you going to? That's right.
Yeah, I think we need to make that correlation. Let's make the correlation between women who experience sexual violence and domestic abuse who are let down by police, and women within who report sexual violence and domestic abuse and are let down within. It's exactly the same thing. And it's exactly the same devaluing attitude. I felt as if as soon as I made a complaint, I became dehumanized. I had no rights, no value, no place. So I was essentially just condensed to a problem who had to just be rubbed out somehow. These are the same people.
I think that's so key too.
Yeah, these are the same people within policing. They've been doing it for so long.
I was impressed by the judge, Judge Adrian Fulford, Bruce Fulford, who did the sentencing of Cousins. And I apologize, I was calling him Cousins earlier. He said in his sentencing that the misuse of a police officer's role justified the steepest possible sentence. And that sounds lovely.
Misuse of a police officer's role.
Misuse of a police officer's role justified the steepest possible sentence.
I'm not enjoying that language used, misuse, because it's so much more than a misuse of a police officer's role. Like he used his power and authority to arrest someone, rape them, and then kill them. That's more than a misuse of your authority.
He does do another comment that's a little...
The judge also said that Sarah was a blameless victim. And for me, that one sentence says everything, because isn't that what they do? So if you get a woman says, this happened to me, what these men are trying to do is immediately assessed, well, can we apportion some sort of blame onto them? And I felt that statement from the judge was really triggering.
Yeah, blameless victim. Aren't all victims blameless because they're victims? Yeah, I agree.
Well, and Sarah Cousins used the pandemic and the coronavirus. There was a lockdown place, like obviously worldwide during certain times, but specifically when he used his position of power, which this is another whole, that's sort of, you know, they need to be held to a higher standard when you have a position of power. And he used his authority to arrest her. She had, you know, she didn't even have anybody to, what's she going to do in that moment? We all know when the police arrest you, you just, oh my God. Like, and I think that's part of is this power and control, where some of these predators who get into this type of work, it's because they can get access, just like a child predator who will get themselves working in areas with young children and tutoring, coaching, teaching, all of it. Here in Canada, like if you have a person that's in a position of trust or authority and they sexually assault more than one victim, it's like an automatic media release to reach out to anybody else. You know, the person who's the abuser that sexually assaulted me has done it to the sexual assault. Two women were brave enough to come forward, myself and someone else. And then there were still four other women where it was sexual harassment, but he was never treated the way I dealt with pedophiles when I worked in the SVU, right? Like totally, I wasn't treated like a victim.
Vilified.
Yeah, that's a good word.
I believe that the single...
It also makes me think of like...
I think that at the crux of it is the first time like that we investigate and prosecute for negligence and misconduct, the senior managers who covered it up and ignored whistleblowers and held them accountable, policing will change. It's never been done. And if that was done now and there was an aggressive investigation to uncover these people and hold them accountable, because there's legislation in this country, it's neglect of duty, and that's essentially what it is to keep people safe. And if you prosecute these senior officers responsible for covering
well,
this
it's up. Interesting, Karen. I think you're bang on there. I mean, I look at Lee's case is demonstrates this completely. If you took all these people that surrounded her and have literally said, "Oh, we didn't see anything," and now they've been promoted. I mean, these people should have been disciplined and for being there, for not saying anything. And they're not, you know, I realize people are scared, but then there's a lot of people that know I know how to play the game. And I know that if I shut my mouth and see no evil, hear no evil, say no evil, I'll get ahead. And they're willing.
Not only that, but they know they're never going to be held responsible.
Exactly. But then
so
they're accessories.
The police service, there are accessories, and the police services have made it very easy for these predators to get away with all of these things because they're never held accountable. If you change the policies, procedures, collective agreements, you know, whatever you call it in the United States and for you, Karen, in Scotland, if you change all of those things so that they address the safety of women and the repercussions for officers who do these things, like you're going to lose your job.
Yeah.
you lose your job. Well, guess what? A lot of those people aren't going to be doing any of that anymore. Like, but the police service is protecting them and coming after us instead. It is sycophant.
The other thing though, too, is when you look at the Police Services Act, it's complete bullshit because they call it a sexual assault misconduct. Are you kidding me? It is. It's a crime. So why
are we? It's a crime for anyone else.
I mean, exactly. Exactly. So let's not put flowers on it and dress it up or put lipstick on the pig. Like let's call it what it is and let's treat it like a criminal offense that it is.
The other thing I wanted, people understood the repercussions of not doing the right thing. And instead of us all rewarding what's wrong and we started rewarding people for doing what's right, the culture would change.
Yeah. But I would think too, like men, the good ones, we need those allies,
great,
right?
There are great men in policing. Wonderful men. I'm married to one. I mean, it's not, and he is just as disgusted and his career is just as done as mine because he's spoken out and he said, no, I'm sorry. And even before stuff happened with me, he was always the type of supervisor that was mediating between management and his people because he refused to let management bully his people. Well, that's the type of person that we would need to see as a leader, but we don't promote those people because they speak out against the and they risk bringing down the culture, heaven forbid. So there's lots of amazing people, men and women in policing. And the problem is their voices are not heard because they are, you know, I guess they're told to shut up or they're kept quiet.
Well, policing is a culture of you toe that blue line. You don't rat. You don't say anything. You be silenced. And why would people talk? Look, I'm a victim of it. And look what they've done to me. They're letting our membership know if you talk about what's happened to you, you tell the truth. Oh boy, you're going to get suspended. Why would anybody? Now, all they've done is create more fear for the women in the police department that I work to speak up.
And women are, they're afraid. Miss Patel, she was in the BBC. She's an ex-police officer. She was in the news the last few days talking about, you know, Metropolitan Police and how women are afraid. They're not going to come forward. They're not going to report it. And that's everywhere. I mean, when you're listening to her, she's not even here in Canada and everything she's saying applies to me. I mean, you don't have, it's worldwide. In my case, my harasser since the day that he finally got a slap on the wrist has been acting in the next role above. And he was demoted again for the inappropriate pictures to women, which I'm sure we can all imagine what they were, you know, on his own phone 2 years prior. Like, these are patterns of behavior. Why are we promoting these people? It is ridiculous.
So here's the thing though, too, when you look at recruiting, what is happening in recruiting? Who is in recruiting? How are these people getting in? We go through so many psych tests and interviews.
I was a recruiter for 5 years and it was like banging my head off of a wall because the people that came in, there's great applicants out there, amazing, all different colors, purple, blue, pink, red, and orange and stripe, and amazing, and all different backgrounds. But when you start to only pick people to check off boxes and fill out your picture for the graduation so that you can say to the community that you've managed to be more reflective and it has nothing to do with quality or ability. We're putting people at risk. We're putting young people at risk. There was people that in no way, shape or form should have been hired. And they were. And I was not well liked by management because I refused to lie. Like, I refused to say I didn't see something that I did, whereas I know other recruiters were okay with that. It was like, well, I looked into it. It wasn't a big deal, so I'm not going to bring it up at the board. I'm like, I'm not wearing this. I am going to tell the board exactly what they've done and exactly what I think about it, and I'm going to let them decide because if I don't do that, I'm just putting myself at risk because they're all going to step back and blame me if something goes wrong with this person. It was so political. And how dare I, as a constable, tell people above me who we should hire and who we shouldn't. And I hired amazing people. I am very proud. I call them my chickens. It's a long story. I follow them. I'm proud of them. I made them earn it. And they feel that. And they still come back to me and say, you know, you were hard. You were harsh, but I feel like I earned it. And I'm like, yes, you did. I have some great coworkers, amazing. And we all talk and we talk about the organization and different things that are going on. And I in no way say anything worse than any of them. And they all agree. But I've been just recently told there's been a complaint about my attitude towards management and the organization. And I'm like, well, what is it? And they're like, you don't tell me what it is. And then when I talk to the guys are like, oh, come on, Mo, you don't say anything worse than any of the rest of us. Like, are you kidding? My voice sounds different, right? And I have boobs. So how dare she? How dare she? She's supposed to just sit there and nod and tell us we're wonderful and just agree. And when she doesn't do that, how dare she?
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, guys.
But these women who are doing exactly that are the ones who are being promoted. So what do you hear all the time? More women in policing. Promote
yes,
more women in policing. But they only promote the women who are maintaining the status quo. The instant you don't play the game that's been in place for decades,
you are bang
your
on.
Career is done. That is it. You are done.
You're bang on.
Yeah, when I got promoted to sergeant, the incident with the abuser happened after I was promoted. And then all of a sudden, and now when I put in for staff sergeant, all of a sudden my evaluations, which had been, you know, if you look at my evaluations of the last 17 years, they were, you know, very good. And it's done, you know, by categories. And so let's say, you know, meet standard and exceeds in some or need some improvement sort of thing would be the three that bosses and supervisors would sort of go between. Well, I went from, you know, having two progressings to seven progressings after I reported, after not being there because I went on a stress leave and having cancer. Yeah. So then I somehow lost skills and all my abilities and I became a complete, all of a sudden, seven progressings out of 10. And I was like, it's just so obvious.
Lee, the same thing happens when you have a baby. Soon as you have a baby, that is it. Your any skills or contribution you had is instantly just gone. That's it. You're a mother now, so your values, your capital has decreased dramatically.
Absolutely. And when I got on the job, I remember very clearly that all of the female white shirts at the time had no children, none. All of the ones who had become senior management, I don't like to call them leaders because they're not, some, but most aren't. Their whole life and they knew that if they wanted to advance in their careers, they couldn't have children. That's honestly why I think most of them were married, but none of them had children.
Just bringing it back to the Everard case and kind of what happened there and how there's a lot of parallel. One thing I wanted to say is that we brought up domestic or intimate partner violence earlier. And I think there's a lot of parallels between the way that policing organizations operate and perpetrators in domestic violence relationships operate.
Okay. Yeah. Can I just say that for me, it all comes down to the power dynamic. Now, the police, whether it's in the UK, Canada, globally, are a massively powerful organization. So keeping them in check and making them change. The only people more powerful than police hierarchy are politicians. And I think that the Sarah Everard case shows that politicians must absolutely and be determined to bring about massive change in policing. Only they can do that. We can talk and we can raise public awareness and raise public pressure, but the onus is on them now. To say enough's enough, it has to change and stop being complicit in the status quo.
You've hit it right on the head, Susan. There, you know, it's all interconnected. There's people that are, you know,
it's so true. And I think we need to figure out, but as a group of warrior women that are all now coming forward, put those steps into place, what we need to do to make sure that we, like, how do we go about changing it?
And protecting others.
Said earlier. Yeah.
And I wish I knew. I constantly think about that question, Lee, like, where do we go from here? What can we do? How do
we've been elected into those roles?
Get a body to actually be interested in this. And I honestly don't know, because when you look at all these separate associations, they're all employed by men who work for these services or connected to these services.
It's so interesting that you say that, because I was telling this story to someone a couple of days ago and I had completely forgotten. But when I was in training, I remember I don't know what he was, if he was a staff sergeant or inspector of training, but he had come in and he had told us all, okay, it's union elections or whatever coming up. You are to vote for this person. You are to vote this person in. And I, like, as a recruit, I was like, oh, okay.
I remember the same. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because when you're new as a recruit, you don't know who anybody is. So then you've got all these senior guys. This is the one. This is who you vote for.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're looking at, you know, when you think back, and I don't know if it's the same for everyone, but I think it is, when I look at these young recruits, these young women trying to make their way, you know, I was 23 years old. I was starry-eyed. I thought everyone around me must be a hero and amazing, super people. And you just were so proud to be part of all of this. And you felt so humbled to be in their presence. And it's like an onion. It slowly starts to peel itself. And then you start seeing, like, behind the curtain, the Wizard of Oz, and he's really small. And, you know, there's only one guy running all this, and he's not something pretty to look at, you know?
Well, and like, I think
that's what I mean, but it takes years to realize that.
And I think there's several pieces to that. So first of all, it's you're starry-eyed and you think these are the people who are like-minded. We're here to serve and protect. We have ethics. We have integrity. And then you start to see that, okay, that's not the case for all.
Because the trauma, it's like, you know, and then it just grows and grows. And then eventually once you become the target or whatever, it's like explodes. You're like, oh my God, how did I let my morals and values erode over time?
Oh my God. Right. And then you all joke daily. And tell me, we all haven't had those conversations in our career where the one guy walks in and everyone says, right? Like, as we leave.
When I reported, it came out only because I said to my staff sergeant, so-and-so, my abuser, is the Weinstein of, and then the name of our service. She was like, yeah. Yeah. And that I was just like, you know, he had been called the rapist too, the creep, the rapist, like I had known my whole career, you know, they were well aware.
But I think too, even if, you know that what someone is saying is true, you just kind of keep going about your business. Cause as long as it's not you, and as long as you haven't gone through it.
There's women in my career that I think back to and I'm angry with myself. I've actually reached out to one of them. Where I used to be like, she's crazy. Like, she's constantly complaining about everything. And then you realize I'm her and I get why she's where she was. And I owe her a huge apology because I didn't get it. I didn't get it. And because it wasn't me and because I was still accepted at that point and things were still going okay for me and nothing bad had happened. I didn't get it. And that happens all the time because you want to think, oh, it's just because they're crazy. Like, clearly they're crazy and can't get along with anybody and they can't take a joke and they take everything too seriously.
That's never going to be me. Or whatever.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Same. It became me too. And I found, I think this platform and even just talking, I've had so many women reach out to me since I've come forward from my service. Yeah. In silent, like they have sent me personal messages to say, thank you. I'm not brave enough to come forward, but thank you. And you please keep doing what you're doing. You've given me strength. So even though they are not in a position right now to speak their truth about what's happened to them and call out the system, we can, you know, by doing this, we are reaching them.
I hope so.
They are hearing us, you know,
and as we see it, that
yeah,
we have people here from three different countries.
Imagine all
the women. It's not even just women. There's men too, right? And
absolutely.
And women of color, men of color. You add that extra layer in there and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, LGBTQ.
All of it. You add all those layers together and it just...
Thank you for joining. Thank you, everybody, for the conversation.
Yeah, it was lovely to meet you.
Yes, thank you very much, Susan.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to subscribe to the Behind Blue Doors podcast to catch the latest episodes. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And check out our website at www.behindbluedoors.org. Take care, and until next time.